Hello, good morning, and welcome to Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebarb. I am Pastor Zach, and of course today we are going to finish up the Old Testament prophets, right? We've started the prophetic books, and we've worked our way through the major and part of the minor, and today we are finishing up the latter half of the minor prophets. There are going to be some interesting things that occur today, though, with these, because we're dealing with some prophets who are going to be preaching and teaching about all of the things that are to come before the exile of the Jewish people. And then a lot of our other prophets are going to be ones that come back and are dealing with post-exile problems. And they end up with two totally different audiences. And so this really is going to help you kind of grasp a lot of what happens with the religious reforms and issues that are going on in the time of Jesus Christ. But so to start us out with, we're looking at Zephaniah. He is the first of the four we have today. And what is very interesting about the book of Zephaniah is that it's not the shortest book per se, but it is one of the smaller books of the minor prophets. And what's interesting about it is that it has one central message, and that is that the day of the Lord, or judgment day, is coming, and the sin of Israel and her Gentile neighbors will be dealt with. That is a consistent message throughout the entire book of Zephaniah, is that the day of sin, the day of atonement is coming. And so, all of this, though, is to help Israel get its act together, all right? And so let's talk a little bit about Zephaniah himself. Zephaniah, we know a lot about because he gives his genealogy all the way back to the fact that he is of the royal line of King Hezekiah. He is Hezekiah's great-great-grandson. And so as a result of that, he is also a distant relative of King Josiah and all of the people that he is going to be addressing with his message. So he's not just preaching to the kings of Judah. He is even preaching to his family members, people that he is related to, about what's going on and what they need to do. It's also very clear that Zephaniah lived in Jerusalem as he wrote this, due to the fact that he keeps referring to it as at this place, and also he refers to the topography of the area with very intimate knowledge. And so, Zephaniah, if we kind of want to get a date pinned down for him, is prophesying in the days of Josiah, all right? And we know that Josiah reigned from 640 to 609. And we know that because of chapter 2, verse 13 of this book, that the destruction of Nineveh had not occurred yet, okay? So because of that, more than likely, Zephaniah was prophesying in between 640 and 612 B.C., Now, to kind of get more of a specific hold on what's going on, we know that King Josiah begins doing religious reforms 12 years into his reign in 628 BC. And because Zephaniah is talking about all of this sin and problems that are going on in the nation, it's more than likely that, even more specifically, he prophesied prior to these reforms, which would mean that his prophecies occurred from 635 to 625 BC. And it's more than likely that what Zephaniah preached is what caused Josiah to begin the religious reforms in 628, because his message was, get your act together, or God's going to destroy you. I feel like that's a pretty blunt, direct point of view. Either you get your act together or this is going to all go down the tubes. But so to kind of give you a theme and an understanding of the structure of this book, we know that Zephaniah, as I said, is a very fierce very blunt book, warning about the coming day of the Lord. It talks about desolation, darkness, ruin, destruction, and all of these things that are going to come because of the sin of the people of Judah. They are doing whatever they want to do. For the most part, they have allowed idolatry, all kinds of fornication and immorality to enter into the nation, and they're just not at all concerned about any of these things. And so we can break Zephaniah down into about three different parts here, okay? So we have the universal judgment to judgment upon Judah, which is chapters 1 to 2. And then we have judgment upon the surrounding nations to judgment upon Jerusalem itself, which is chapters 2, verse 4, to chapter 3, verse 7. And then we have judgment and cleansing of all nations to the restoration of Israel, which is all the way from chapter 3, verse 8 to the end of the book. But the two bigger divisions of this book, even than those, is the judgment day of the Lord and the salvation of the Lord, okay? And so, in true prophetic fashion, Zephaniah gives what's going on, why they're going to be punished, and what will happen as that in the future they will be restored. And his message is very much like Amos's, who actually prophesied 100 years before him, about the fact that this destruction was going to come if the people did not get their act together. And so to kind of give you a breakdown here, chapter 1, verse 1 to chapter 1, verse 4, is judgment on the whole earth. Okay, Zephaniah starts out ringing everybody in. Chapter 1, verse 4 to chapter 2, verse 4 is judgment specifically on the nation of Judah for all of the sins that it is committing. And then chapters 2, verse 4 to chapter 3, verse 1 is judgment on the nations surrounding Judah, meaning the Gentile nations. And then chapters 3, verse 1 to chapter 3, verse 8 is judgment on the city of Jerusalem. And then chapters 3, verse 8 and verse 9 is judgment on the whole earth again. Zephaniah talks about not just the coming day for Judah, which would be the taking over by Babylon, but he is also getting into a bit of the Revelation discussion of the end of time when God is going to come and judge the entire earth for what it has been doing. And then, in the last couple of verses, verses 9 through 14, there's the promise of conversion. And 14 to 20 is the promise of restoration, meaning that they will be brought back to what they are supposed to be. And so that is basically Zephaniah in a nutshell. It is, you need to get your act together because the day of the Lord is coming, and if you're not prepared for it, it's not going to be a good day for you. However, if you do what you're supposed to do, then there is the future hope of restoration. Very simple, very straightforward. And that leads us into Haggai, all right? Haggai is the second shortest book in the Old Testament. Okay, Obadiah is the first, Haggai is the second. But again, very strong, blunt messages, four sermons to be specific, and they all accomplish what they set out to do. What happens is that Zephaniah was preaching before the exile. Our last three prophets, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, are all going to be preaching after the exile, when Persia has allowed Israel to go back and rebuild its city and the temple. And so what happens is that under Zerubbabel, everybody goes back, they're supposed to be rebuilding the temple, and they stop rebuilding the temple and become more concerned about beautifying their houses and beautifying the city than finishing the temple of God. And so, because of their priorities being all out of whack, they will not be blessed by God. Because, guys, reality is that if God is not the priority in your life, then God is not going to bless the priorities that you have misplaced Him for. I tell that people all the time, because I get things all the time, Brother Zach, we didn't come church Sunday because we're watching our grandkids. Why didn't you bring your grandkids? Well, I mean, we wanted to spend family time with them. Yeah, but if you put God first by bringing them, then there's future blessings down the road. They'll be saved. They'll be good individuals. You'll get to spend more time with them because they'll actually want to come and see Grandma and Grandpa because Grandma and Grandpa did what they're supposed to do. Friends, putting God first always places everything that you desire first as well. Because God is going to give you the best that he can give you, okay? Meaning that whatever God has intended for your life, He will give you to the fullest if your priorities are in the correct place. Because Israel's priority is not in the correct place, God is not blessing the rebuilding of the city. He's not blessing the rebuilding of their homes. They're under constant threat and constant attack because they have not finished what they should have finished when they got there, which was the temple. And so, of course, again, Haggai comes and his message is, get your stuff together. That's pretty much the prophet's message no matter what. They all have maybe a different specific approach to it, but at the end of the day, all of them, the whole purpose is get your act together. So Haggai, we have quite a little bit of knowledge, okay? Haggai is one of these books and one of these people that we just don't know a lot about, okay? We know that Ezra talks about him twice in his book in chapters 5 and 6. And we know that he worked alongside the younger prophet, who we're going to talk about next, Zechariah, during this time, and they both were encouraging the rebuilding of the temple. As far as we know, Haggai returned from Babylon with Zerubbabel, and he lived in Jerusalem, okay? Some go back and forth as to when he was born, what his age was. Some say that he was born in Judah before the destruction of the first temple. And it was one of the small group that actually remembered the former glory of the nation's temple. And that would mean that he was about 75 years old when he prophesies in 520 BC. However, it's very likely that he was born in Babylon during the captivity and came back. Whichever one you want to believe is fine. Regardless, God gives Haggai the information for all of his messages, meaning that he could have very well been born in Babylon and still had the knowledge of the former glory of the temple that he had, okay? So to pin down a date, 538 BC, okay? Cyrus of Persia issues a decree allowing the Jews to go back home and rebuild their temple, okay? And in 536 BC, work on the temples commence. So it takes them 2 years to get there, get everything set up, get to work, okay? They were met with extremely strong opposition from the Samaritans, and very quickly, 2 years later, they stop working on the temple altogether in 534 BC. It is during this time Haggai and Zechariah are brought to urge the people to get the job done. All of the sermons Haggai preaches are precisely dated in the year 520 BC. That's all he preaches. 1 year he preaches, okay? And this would have been under Darius I, who was king of Persia, all right? He was the one He was the one who actually, following him would have been Xerxes, who brought Esther to the throne, for everyone who remembers the book of Esther that we'd already talked about a long time ago, okay? But so Darius comes and he is king of Persia during the time that Haggai is going to come on the scene, along with Zechariah and then later Malachi. And what's unique about these three men as prophets is that they face an entirely different group of people than the prophets before the exile had faced. The prophets before the exile were dealing with people who were caught up in nothing but empty ritualism, their religion. They thought as long as they killed a goat, things were good with God, okay? They did not want a relationship with God. They didn't in any way, shape, or form care about actually keeping the law. They just wanted to do the, you know, follow all, cross all their T's, dot all their I's, this kind of nonsense. The Israelites, after the exile, though, are completely different. Persia is famous for its tolerance of religions. The Persians thought all religions were equal, all religions led to heaven, all religions led to life fulfillment. Okay, they were the most tolerant of people. I would say they were even more tolerant than the United States is in regards to religious standpoints. Because even here in the States, there's a lot of times that politicians will attack different religious groups, most of the time Christians, but will attack different religious groups. And usually, and when I say attack, of course, nobody's being actively persecuted at this time. But there's insults thrown, you know, maybe, well, they're a little, you know, dumb, these kinds of things. Persia was not so. Persia, they were all very much religion mattered. They wanted to know about the religions of every area they conquered. That was one of the first things they would do, was go and speak with the religious leaders of that particular country. And so they get, you know, the right to go back home. Darius the First is allowing them, you know, to continue doing what they're doing. There is no opposition by their government to finish and rebuild their home and rebuild their their temple and get back to worshiping God the way that they believed they could. But because of this super tolerant attitude, which, you know, there's two sides to every coin, pros and cons to this, because of this tolerance, when the Israelites get back, they're really not all that worried about laws. They're really not all that worried about doing what God commanded to do in Leviticus. They're really not all that worried about getting the temple rebuilt. They don't have any desire to get back into that place where they are a light to the world, because of the fact that they've been exposed to this, oh, all religions matter mindset. And because of that, when they get back, they're very complacent. They're not all this worried about it, and they are not only just complacent because of this ideology, but they're highly discouraged because of the fact that when they get back to Israel, they kind of feel like, well, no matter what we do, it's always going to end ugly because, you know, our forefathers stringently kept all these rules, which is not at all what happened, but that's what they think. And God destroyed them and put them under exile. And now that we're back, we might as well not even bother with it, because now here we got these guys coming in that are telling us that God's going to destroy us again. So it is what it is. And so their religious standpoint is they have no ritualism, no care, no anything. Their pride doesn't come from their religion the way that their forefathers did before. So it's a totally different audience. The audience before was, you have to have a relationship with God. The audience now is, you actually need to care about what God has commanded you to do. And so because of all of these things, the returning Jews, they didn't pay any attention whatsoever to what they did or to what God commanded. And then, of course, eventually just quit altogether. And so Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi come in to urge them to rebuild the temple before they fall into idolatry again. And also to keep them, of course, from being destroyed by God again for not doing what they are supposed to do. So, theme of the book of Haggai. It is extremely basic, clear theme. The remnant must reorder its priorities and complete the temple before they can expect the blessings of God. Guys, even in your life, if your priorities are not correct, God is not going to bless the work of your hands. Now, I'm not telling you that if you get your priorities right, Lord's going to give you a Mercedes. That's not how this works. What it means is that you're going to finally see the blessings, the work of God in your life, meaning that may be that your needs are met right when they need to be met. That may be that you have joy and happiness that you did not experience before. Whatever the case may be, you're going to have a whole lot more going for you if you're more focused on the work of God than on amassing things to yourself. Then if you continue to worry about amassing things to yourself and you get around to God when you have some free time. And so that's the situation of these people. Their priorities are completely shifted in the wrong way. And because of that, Haggai preaches four messages. The first one is that they need to complete the temple. Okay? Second one is what will happen as a result of them completing the temple, which means the glory of the latter temple, meaning the fact that Jesus Christ would one day come into this temple. The Messiah himself, the glory of God incarnate, would stand in this temple because they had finally done what they were supposed to do. The third thing would be the present blessings of obedience, meaning you start doing things the way you're supposed to and God's going to start taking the heat off of you. And then finally, the future blessings of promise, which is the Messiah to come. Haggai talks a lot about the Messiah who is going to come, okay? And so, with Haggai, we're going to give you a breakdown here. Chapters 1, chapter 2, consider your ways. That's the title of the sermon, meaning my house, God's house, is in ruin while y'all's looks peachy clean. How in the world can you explain that one? Why in the world would you think that that is the correct way to do this? This is the first rebuke to the people, okay? Chapters 2, verse 1 to chapter 2, verse 10, is the glory of the latter temple shall be greater than the original. That's a encouragement, okay? A future encouragement to get back to work. The third one, verses 10 to 20 of chapter 2, from this day I will bless you. It's the second rebuke, okay? Get things together. You've got to get this done. And then the chapter 2, verse 20 to the end of the book is the last message, and it's only three verses long, and it is, I will shake heaven and earth. And that is the second encouragement of what God was going to do with Messiah not very long from this point, about 400 years. And 400 to 500 years, Messiah is going to come on the scene, and the people of God are going to finally see the promises that God had said would be fulfilled come to fruition. Okay, so that is Haggai in a nutshell. Let's talk about Zechariah real quick, and then Mr. Malachi, and we will be looking ahead to the New Testament, finally at last, huh? So, Zechariah, all right, he is one of about 30 other people that have the name Zechariah, all right? That's a very famous name in the Old Testament, and we already know a little bit, obviously, about him because I talked about him with you just a minute ago with Haggai because they prophesied at the same time and to the same group of people. And, of course, the whole point of Zechariah and Haggai was to get the people to finish rebuilding the temple. However, Zechariah has a different approach in his messages, okay? And his messages is all about the fact that if they'll hurry up and get this done, one day the Messiah would inhabit this temple. Meaning his was all about Jesus Christ is going to come and he will preach and teach inside this temple. Your Messiah is not far off from coming. get to work, get this done. That is his message, okay? His name means Yahweh remembers, all right? We know that he is the son of Berechiah and the grandson of Iddo, and all of these, of course, are from the priestly tribe of Levi. We also know that he was born in Babylon, and he was brought by his grandfather to Palestine with the Jewish exiles under Zerubbabel, all right? He's a very young man when he is preaching with Haggai. He actually, in his, you know, being this young of a guy, has this different approach, has this different understanding and different view than Haggai does. And he actually preaches after the work is resumed and completed. In fact, chapters 9 through 14, we don't even have a date for. All we know is that they are talking about references to Greece, and they even passed the scene and had been succeeded by Xerxes, the king who made Esther queen of Persia. So Zechariah goes on to prophesy and to preach even far beyond just this message of rebuilding the temple and the necessity of it. And so Zechariah, he uses a series of 8 visions, 4 messages, and 2 burdens to portray God's future plans to his people. Okay? The first 8 chapters are written as an encouragement for people to get to be rebuilding the temple. The last 6 chapters are written after the completion of the temple in anticipation of the coming Messiah. All right? So, to give you a breakdown of all of this, as we know that he was prophesying at the same time as Haggai, so 520 to 518, okay? And then, of course, later on to 480 and 470 BC in these areas under Xerxes. But his book can be written, broken down this way. We have the 8 visions, and those come in chapters 1 through chapter 7, okay? So chapter 1, verse 1, chapter 1, verse 7 is the call to repentance, okay? Chapters 1, verse 7 to chapter 6, verse 9 is the 8 visions that Zechariah has. And then 6, 9 to chapter 7 is the crowning of Joshua, all right? Then we have the 4 messages, okay? The 4 sermons. That's chapter 7 to chapter 9. And they are question of fasting, all right? There's all this discussion about fasting and the future and things that are going to be to come. And then chapters 9 through 14, the end of the book, are the 2 burdens, okay? First burden, chapters 9 to 12, is the rejection of the Messiah. Oh boy. Meaning that Israel would reject its coming king. Even though they're building this temple, he's encouraging them to, because of the fact that Jesus Christ will one day actually walk in this temple and preach the word of God, he also informs them, you will not hear him. The second burden is the reign of the Messiah, chapters 12 to the end of the book, okay? And that's all about Israel's future and what was to come. I will tell you, though, about Zechariah's visions real quick. So the first one is the man and horses among the myrtle trees, okay? And that was that the Lord would again be merciful to Jerusalem. The 4 horns and the 4 craftsmen are those who were scattered Judah are cast out, all right? So all the people who have helped to scatter Judah will be removed. Man with measuring line, okay? That one is about God building a protective wall of fire around Jerusalem. Then we have the cleansing of Joshua, and this is the servant the branch comes to save, okay? The golden lampstand and the olive trees is that the Lord will empower Israel through his spirit. The flying scroll is the dishonesty is cursed, meaning those who are dishonest are cursed. Woman in the basket, wickedness will be removed. Sorry, women. I'm just teasing. It's a very good vision. The 4 chariots, that's the spirit of heaven executes judgment on the whole earth. So there's a lot of interesting things that come to pass in this, both futuristic and present, in Zechariah's visions. Now, let's talk about Malachi, because the Old Testament does not end on a good note with the people of God, all right? He was a prophet in the days of Nehemiah. Nehemiah, as we know, came after Zerubbabel. And his message is one of judgment to a people plagued with corrupt priests, evil practices, a very, very arrogant false sense of security. And he is going to use the question and answer method in his sermons to really get down to all of the sins of this nation, which is hypocrisy, infidelity, mixed marriages, divorce, false worship, and of course, arrogance. And guys, Malachi is going to be the last prophet that speaks to Israel for 400 years before John the Baptist comes on the scene. And his message is one of nothing but condemnation. You know, Haggai and Zechariah had a group of people who were just like, well, you know, nothing we do changes, nothing we do matters. Whereas Malachi, they have begun to get back to being what they were before. They're all, well, we're just keeping it on the outside. I offered my goat this week, I'm good. And that is going to grow even more rampant, like on steroids, on the intertestamental period where the Pharisees and the Sadducees come into being and we have the Maccabean revolt and all these things that occur. Because these people are extreme. They're either one or the other. They're either way over here, woe is me, nothing we do is right, God doesn't care, so we shouldn't care at all. Or they are extreme religion legalism, where I'm great, I'm perfect, everybody else is terrible, God ought to love me because I'm so great. And so Malachi comes and says, no, in fact, you are 110% awful and terrible and right back where you had begun. And in fact, Malachi's name actually means my messenger, meaning that God had already chosen Malachi to deliver this message to the people. Now, we cannot get an exact date on when Malachi, you know, was writing, preaching, prophesying. We do know, though, that he addressed all the problems that Nehemiah faced. So more than likely, he had come to Jerusalem. Nehemiah came to Jerusalem about 444 BC, and he returned to Persia in 432. So it's very likely that Malachi came while Nehemiah was gone in 432 and 425 BC. Okay? And so the people of Israel, of course, are right back where they are. They're disillusioned. They're doubtful. They don't care about it. They really wondered if God would even keep the promises he made about Messiah. You know, who really cares? And externally, of course, their attitudes were manifested in empty religion. They cheated on tithes and offerings. And they didn't care to the moral or ceremonial law. It didn't bother them one single bit. And Malachi challenges all of this and calls the people to new commitment and obedience to God. Okay? And it's divided into three parts. You have the privilege of the nation, the pollution of the nation, and then the promise of the nation. You got to love those alliterations, right? Pastors and alliterations, goodness gracious. So, to talk about all of these, though, chapters 1, verse 1 to chapter 1, verse 6 is the privilege of the nation, okay? Meaning the love that God had for the nation. They were God's chosen people, guys. They had one of the best standings in the world, and they still are God's chosen people. And so they have one of the best standings in the world with God Almighty. They have been given these ultimate blessings that I'll bless those that bless you, curse those that curse you. If you do what you're supposed to do, I'll bless you abundantly. Like they have been given some of the greatest promises that nobody else has been given. And because of that privilege, they end up in this state of, well, God, we're God's people, so God can't get rid of us. God can't punish us. God can't nothing, because without us, God doesn't have any people. That's kind of what their attitude becomes, which is the pollution of the nation. Chapters 1, verse 6, to chapter 3, verse 16. That's the sin of the priests and the sin of the people, meaning the religious leaders were in just as much trouble as the people were. Because who was in charge of the people? The religious leaders. And then there is a promise of hope given to the nation. This is chapters 3, verse 16 to the end of the book in chapter 4. We have the book of remembrance, the coming of Christ, and the coming of Elijah, talking about the Messiah and John the Baptist, all of these that were to come, okay? And this is the last message that they will hear about Jesus Christ and his imminent coming, and about the coming of John the Baptist, and about everything that God promised them coming to fruition for 400 years. God sends Malachi. This is his last spokesperson before Jesus Christ will come. He's going to be silent. No prophets, no messages, no correction, no anything for 400 years. And his message is, get your act together. You do not know how long it will be before my Messiah will come and fulfill all of the promises that were given to you. And instead of the people doing as Malachi told them to do, they just got worse and worse and worse, to the point that after 400 years, they are willing to kill their own Messiah. Friends, the reality of your life is that if your priority is not correctly placed, if your priorities are not about serving God, it will always lead to destruction and issues in your life. All four of these prophets went and told these people, repent, get your priorities right, get your life right. If you do not, bad things are going to happen. None of them listened. And under Zephaniah, they ended up going to Babylon and ended up in exile. Afterwards, with Haggai and Zechariah and Malachi, they all said, your Messiah is imminent. You need to be ready. You need to be prepared. And because they're not ready and not prepared, they miss him completely. And today are still looking for him when he came almost 2,000 years ago and they missed it. If your priority in life is not focusing on God, you're going to miss God every time, and it's going to cost you greatly. So, that is the end of the Old Testament. Can you believe it? We've been doing this since, what, March? And now it's August, and we're just now finally done with the Old Testament. Whew. However, next week, we're going to have a very interesting podcast. We are going to talk about things that I really do not know why pastors do not talk about this more, which is the intertestamental period, aka what happens in that 400 years of silence that sets the stage for the New Testament, okay, the coming of Jesus Christ. This is a very important piece of information. That 400 years is what leads to everything being the way that it is when Jesus Christ comes. Also, there is a ton of prophecies and a ton of things that occur in this 400 years that have been spoken about since Genesis. God, in this 400 years of silence, gets to work on bringing his Messiah to fruition. So, while we're not starting the New Testament next week, we will be talking about little-known history and fulfillment of prophecy that many Christians do not know about, have no idea about, have never even heard about. That are very important for understanding the culture and the people of the New Testament, the ones that you go, why in the world could they not believe in the Messiah? Well, this is what has led up to that. And it will show you the importance of sticking to the Word of God exactly the way it is written and getting your priorities correct, because you can destroy generations of people from having the opportunity to know and to serve God correctly. So, that has been Zephaniah, Haggai, Malachi, and Zechariah. As always, go look over these four books, get a feel for them, read about them a little bit. Keep in mind what's going on, the time period, and the people that they're dealing with. And be prepared next week for our discussion on what happens in the 400 years of silence. It's good to have you with us today. I am Zach Ebarb, and this has been Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach. Get out of here and go study.